I want to read the words that are there in the center of the order of service. They're taken from the book of Ruth, which is a book in the Old Testament. This book we've looked at over the last two nights. The first chapter tonight we're going to be considering together. The second chapter, Ruth chapter 2. This is God's word. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech. If you haven't been here the other two nights, I will be explaining who these people are. Whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean with the ears of grain after him, in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" The servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is a young Moabite who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young woman. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink with the young men what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing down to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw that she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, the man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. And Ruth the Moabite said, besides, he said to me, you still keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go with his young woman, lest in another field you be assaulted. So she kept close to the young woman of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. And she lived with her mother-in-law. God. On Wednesday evening, we saw the heartache, the national heartache, that this story is told during a period in the history of God's people in Israel where we read that everyone did what was right in their own eyes. It's not a good place to be when everybody is doing what is right in their own eyes. It's not a good place to be. It's not a healthy place to be. I was once a boarding master in a boarding school, and I loved it. I went then, was about 19 years of age. Some of the boys, some of the oldest boys were 18, so I was just a few months older than them. And there was about 85 boys in the boarding house. There was 70 or 80 girls, but 160 young people. And myself and a matron and a cook, we were responsible for looking after them all out of school hours from Monday to Friday. I loved it. I just loved it. I enjoyed every moment of it. I gave myself to it. I organized weekends away for them. And it was a great time in my life. When I left, I laugh about it now, they bought a cup and they named it my name. And it was presented for some event in the school. And I thought, what if I'd stayed for 3 years? What would they have done there? But they'd been so used with people just staying for 6 months or a year and then leaving. But after I had been there, I went back at the first Christmas time, and I went in, and immediately I could feel an atmosphere difference. And I worked out what the problem was. And I pulled two or three of the guys that I knew would cause bother in the boarding house into a room. And I said, right, tell me what's happening. And I looked into their eyes and they said, we have the run of the place. The new boarding master basically has lost control and we have taken over. That was the summation of what they were saying. And I said, are you enjoying it? And they said, no, we're not. They said it was good for the first few months, but not anymore. We said we really enjoyed it whenever you exercised a bit of control, because we always knew where the boundaries were, and you were fair. You see, when people get to do whatever they want, nobody's happy. The bullies aren't happy. The people who are weak and vulnerable aren't happy. Everybody is unhappy. And what was going on in Israel at this time was that the place was very unhappy. Not only were they unhappy because of the relationships that had broken down, they were unhappy because Ruth chapter 1, which I didn't read tonight, tells us there was a famine in the land, which was a judgment of God. And then there was the heartache personal. We were introduced to this man, Elimelech, and his wife, Naomi, and their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Elimelech was an Israelite. Benjamite, grew up in Judah all his days. The famine comes, he picks up his wife, they go into Moab, the neighboring territory, just 50 or 60 miles away. He sets up home. He probably is a very prominent individual, financially all well off. And then we read that he dies. So very quickly, Naomi is left as a widow. Very quickly, she's left as a widow. And then we read that over the space of the next 10 years, that her two daughters, two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, marry two young Moabite women. One's called Orpha and the other's called Ruth. And so they set up this relationship. So now you have Naomi, the widow. You have her son, Mahlon. You have her son, Chilion. And you have Orpha and Ruth. And that's the family. But then within a space of 10 years, the two younger men die, leaving three widows. A very heartbreaking situation. The loss would have been very, very difficult to bear. It would have been a tough time for Naomi and these two young women. Three women sharing the same reality of a husband who had died. Then Naomi hears that that the famine has lifted from Israel and that there is going to be a blessing. The words that speak to us about it says that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. The Lord visited his people. The Lord blessed his people. And the Lord's blessing was good for his people. And so Naomi decided she would return back to her land of origin, back to Judah. And she sets off to go back to Judah, and Orpha and Ruth continue with her. That was probably something that she hadn't expected. Probably she would have assumed that they would have gone with her a mile or two, and then they'd have said their goodbyes and returned home. But that's not what happens. As they walk along the road, Naomi, who is a very straight character, a very robust character, a very honest individual, a very godly woman, she stops them and she says to them, "You need to go back home. There isn't anything for you in Israel at all. You need to go back home to your mother's house, and you need to come under her wing again, and possibly, if the Lord is merciful and gracious, you will marry again and you'll have family. There's no point in you coming with me." She even makes what's a very sort of strange statement. She says, "Even if I was to marry today and I was to conceive children today, would you wait until they have grown up until you would marry them?" The obvious answer would be no. So she exhorts them. She is very direct with them. She says to them, "There isn't anything for you in Israel. Where I'm going, there are no prospects. You will be a foreigner. You will be a foreign female. You'll be a foreign female widow. You'll be a foreign female young widow. There's nothing there for you. You need to go back to your parents. You need to go back to your home. You need to go back to at least having the possibility of some semblance of a life in the future." Orpha takes the counsel of Naomi, weeps, gives her a hug, kisses her, and leaves. Ruth doesn't do that. And last night we considered how that is inexplicable. How that makes no sense. Why would a young woman from a different territory, a different region, who had married into this family, but had lost everything with the death of her husband, why would she want to continue on a journey into a foreign land, a different language, a different culture, with an older woman who she has only known by virtue of marriage, although she did love her? But why would she want to do that and live her life in a very, very, very bleak and precarious situation? Because there was no social fund to provide for widows. We saw over the last two evenings different scriptures in the Bible where God commanded his people to provide for the fatherless and the widow because he knew that the fatherless and the widow would be exploited. Where everybody does their own thing, where everybody does what is right in their own eyes, then those who have a particular gift, as it were, for business, you can be sure that they would exploit that. In the history of mankind, there's always been individuals who've been able to exploit the weak and build financial empires. We don't want to dig too deep into the history of our own nation, because you don't have to go back many centuries to find that the wealth that built the great buildings in the cities of Glasgow and Edinburgh was founded on a trade that was would be unacceptable to us today. Don't want to dig too far into that. It's the same for every nation in the world that has risen to a power of zenith. You look and see, well, where has that power come from? It's come from their economic trade, their welfare and their business. And you ask, how have they been able to manage this? And you look at their economy and you see their economy at one critical stage was founded on the, what we would term, abuse of people. Either slaving or else giving people very, very little remuneration for their work. And so when you would come along to the widows, they would be at the very bottom because there would be nobody to protect them. There'd be no husband to go home to at night and say, I was abused today financially. I was taken a hand of. And so the heartache, the loss of physical contact, the emotional loss that Ruth would have felt, the loss of security, the loss of stability, all that would have been compounded by her going into this strange land with this woman whom she had known for a few years to live her life simply to provide for herself and then for this older woman to die and for her to be left on her own. It didn't make any sense, did it? You put yourself into Ruth's shoes. Which would you have opted for? The security of home, Moab, with your parents. The stability of that home environment. The prospect of a future husband from a people of your own clan. Or the loneliness, vulnerability, insecurity, and bleakness of living in another land, looking after yourself and an elderly woman. Given the choice, which would you opt for? Why did Ruth opt to go to Israel? Why does she opt to do the thing that doesn't make any sense? It's irrational. As we saw at length last night, Ruth chose to do that because she wanted a relationship with God. That was the only reason. There was no other reason. She says, your people will be my people, your God, my God. Ruth looked at Naomi and she saw in Naomi's life the difficulty that Naomi experienced, the heartache that Naomi went through, the tears that Naomi shed. When Naomi goes back into Judah, we read that she tells her old friends whom she meets that they shouldn't call her Naomi any longer, they should call her Mara, because her life has been so difficult, bitter. And yet through it all, Ruth looked at Naomi's life and Ruth saw something that was real. She saw something that was real. You know, we live in a world that's unreal. We live in a world that's filled with lies. Lies and lies and lies. you pick up your newspaper, if you buy a newspaper, you listen online or you watch online stories, and you know as well as I do that the vast majority of all that is written bears no resemblance to the truth at all. There is no truth in it. It's all predicated on lies. That's a fact. And whenever Ruth looks into the life of Naomi, she sees something that is real. She sees in Naomi's trust in God something that is real. And so she decides to go with Naomi back to Judah. For those of us who are believers in Jesus Christ, we need to know that we are being watched and observed. We need to know that we are being seen. We need to know that people do look at our lives, and what we say, not by our lips, but what we say by our words and our actions, conveys an awful lot. That what we do and say by the things that we live out in our lives communicate what really we believe. And here this woman, Ruth, evidenced the reality of God in the life of Naomi. She saw it. And so she wanted to go with Ruth to Judah, or to Naomi to Judah. Now, that choice having been made, there was no prospect for Ruth to hope for anything other than difficulty. The only thing that Ruth could have thought of was difficulty. She had no hope of anything else. She had no prospect of anything else. We read in chapter 2 that she does something. She sets to work. She sets to work in a field. She sets to work in a field because she has come across a law. A law has been given that she has heard of, and that law is that there will be provision for widows in the land. There will be provision for widows in the land. And that provision will come by way of food being given through the gleaning of the grain field. In other words, what would happen would be that farmers would have their harvest, and the widows could go out into the fields, and the widows could follow after those who were harvesting the crop. And as they would harvest the crop, that which was left, as the men gathered in the harvest, the little bits would fall off, the widows could then, they could follow after that, and they could pick that up, and that would give them the sustenance that they would need. That's how many of these widows lived. And God had made provision, and he tells us about that in Leviticus and Deuteronomy. He tells us that the people of Israel are to make this provision for the widows, that they are to provide for the widows in this way, that the farmers are not to be so intent as to glean everything that's in the field so that there's no prospect for these women who are in need, the widows and the fatherless. They need this sustenance, and this is one way where there is no social service of providing this. And as she begins this task, as she sets about the task that God provides for her by this means, this choice that she makes, this choice that she makes to take the opportunity that she has, is the first step, the second step on her road to joy. Here's a second step on the road to joy. Her first step is hearing the issue. It is listening to the heartache. It's realizing that she's broken. Now she's traveling from where she was to where she is. going to be. And so here we see what I want you to see tonight. Here we see what I want you to see tonight. That if you start the journey from heartache to joy, God will provide opportunities for you along the way. He will provide opportunities for you along the way. You see, one of the greatest difficulties in making the choice to walk with God is because of all the things that you perceive you have to leave behind. I would like to go to church, but there's things that I do on a Sunday that I have to give up. I would like to have more peace and ease in my life, but there's things in my life that I would and couldn't do without. If I was to become good, it would take a huge amount of effort, and I don't think I could make it. I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could sustain it. I don't think I'd be able to keep it going. So why would I give up on those things in my life and do something that I don't think I could keep at? Why would I even begin to journey along that road? The reason why you can journey along that road is because God will provide you opportunity, and God will provide you encounters with people that will enable you, by His grace, to give up what you think you can't do without and to do what you know you can't do. There's no one in this building tonight who believes in God because they have willed themselves to believe in God. There's nobody in this building tonight who has reached a point in their life where they decided, I'm going to walk with God and I'm going to muster up the energy to make that happen. And I'm going to stop doing this. I'm going to stop being frustrated. I'm going to stop being anxious. I'm going to stop worrying about money. I'm going to stop worrying about relationships. I'm going to stop worrying about people. I'm going to stop worrying about my work. I'm going to start really enjoying my life. And the way that I'm really going to enjoy my life is I'm going to go to church on a Sunday, and I'm going to go there and I'm going to really think about God, and I'm going to make myself believe in God. That just doesn't happen. That can't happen. That won't happen. What happens is that when someone comes to the point where they realize that their relationship with God doesn't exist, they then make a choice to seek God, to pursue after God. And as they make that choice to pursue after God, God then, who is already ahead of them, provides opportunities and encounters which makes it possible for that person to live their life believing in God. Ruth here goes to work in the field of a man. She takes the initiative, yes. She's polite. She's focused. We read that she gets up early in the morning. She's worked all day, the reaper says, verse 7. And she hasn't taken any break except for a short break. She has taken the opportunity to avail of what God's law has provided for her. God's law has provided for her to go into this field, any field in the region, and glean. She has taken the opportunity to do that. That's the key point. God gives us opportunities to seek after him. The key point is, are we really wanting to do that? This woman gets up early in the morning. She has continued from early morning until now, the laborer says in verse 7. And she has worked through the whole day. She has gone after God. She has sought after God in the sense of seeking after what God has provided for her by way of giving her the opportunity to provide food for herself and her mother-in-law. There were plenty of fields in Bethlehem. There were many, many opportunities for her. But Naomi and Ruth could have sat at home and done nothing about it. And this journey from heartache to joy is a journey that if you realize that you don't have this relationship with God and you need this relationship with God, then you have to take opportunity to seek that relationship out. You have to come after God and ask God and say to God, I want you to show me how I can know you, how I can have this relationship with you. There is no point in having this heartache, this broken sense of I am broken in my relationship with God, and then not coming and taking the opportunity that God gives. And as this young woman takes this opportunity, you see how God more than meets her. God is going ahead of her. For we read that Boaz, who owns the field, at the same time as Ruth is coming to the field, Boaz is on his way back from Bethlehem, and he passes by the same field that Ruth is in. He just happens to pass by that field. And out of the corner of his eye, Boaz just happens to see this young girl who he doesn't recognize. He recognizes the other woman, but he doesn't recognize her. And so he speaks to one of the reapers and says, who's the young girl over there? And those who are reaping in his field tells him that she is Naomi's daughter-in-law. Now, how did that happen? How did this man Boaz, who turns out to be a relative, who turns out to be a godly man, and we see that he's a godly man because of the way in which he speaks to his reapers. He introduces himself and he says to them, the Lord be with you. The Lord be with you. And that just wasn't a statement that he was making. He was conveying them to them the Lord's blessing upon them. He's a man of real integrity. He's an honest man. And so here you see, God has taken Ruth into this field. God brings Boaz into this field. And then Boaz speaks with her. And look at the encouragements that he gives to her. Verse 8. He says to her, stay with these girls. He says to the young men, stay away from Ruth. And then he tells her to stay in the field. Now listen, my daughter, he says to her, do not go to glean in another field, but keep close to my young woman. Then he says to her, I have charged the young men not to touch you. And he says, stay in the field and drink all that you need. Don't leave the field. Our fear in life is that if we turn to God, if we do that which is irrational and unreasonable, if we do that which doesn't make any sense, that we are on our own. We're on our own. If we turn away from the security and the comfort that we feel at the moment, and we give ourselves to God, and we seek God, we're afraid. And our fear is that we will not be able to cope. We'll not be able to cope. And what we forget is that when God calls us, God is already providing for us. When God visits us, God is already ahead of us. Ruth traveled into Judah with no prospect. She did so because she wanted a relationship with God, because she saw a relationship that Naomi had with God that even through difficulty was real. And Ruth, seeing that, wanted some of that herself. Ruth had experienced enough in life to know that life could not satisfy her. Ruth had experienced enough in life to know that life would not give her all that she wanted. It wouldn't give her the peace. It wouldn't give her the contentment. It wouldn't give her the rest of her soul. And even though God took from her, even though God took her husband from her, yet this girl wanted to still know this God, and she was prepared to seek after him. And here is God in this situation, and he is providing for her. He is giving to her. He is giving her and will give her a relationship with this man, Boaz, which will be far beyond anything that she could hope for or wish for. She even says in verse 10 of chapter 2, she says to Boaz, "Why have you done this for me? Why have you loved me? Why have you done this and given this to me? I am a foreigner. Why am I entitled to this?" Why are you giving this to me? But she only gets it, you see, because she pursues after it. She only gets it because she wants to taste and see him. And God is ahead of her, and God is providing for her. Not only does Boaz offer her the safety and security of gleaning in his field, the company of the young woman working there, not only does he offer the safety of the young man not to touch her, he gives her food to eat. And then he says something that's astonishing. He tells the men who are reaping in the field to leave some of the harvest so that she can come and pick it up. And so she comes and she picks it up. And she picks up about 22 liters of grain, an unheard of amount of grain. Unheard of amount of grain. She brings it home to Naomi, and Naomi is astonished by the amount of grain that she's received. God has given Ruth and Naomi more than they could have ever dreamed of. He has given them more than they could have ever dreamed of. He has given them more than they could have ever dreamed of. And this is God. God gives us more than we could ever dream of. God gives us more peace, more contentment, more rest, more hope, more material blessings, more spiritual blessings than we could ever dream of, if we will but lay hold of him. This girl had no hope. This girl walked to Judah, and God provided for her in the field and through this life of the man Boaz. And as I've preached tonight, I felt as if I'm not getting through. But I trust that what I feel is not what's happening. I trust that the Spirit of God will work in some of your souls and your hearts, and that He will take what I've said and He will enable you to actually hear what is being said. That when we understand this heartache of the broken relationship with God and the loss of this relationship in our lives, and as we turn to God, and as we look at the irrationality of that, the fact that that makes no sense at all, that God will enable you to do what I feel I have been unable to do tonight. That God will enable you to hear and understand that if you will seek Him out, He will provide for you in ways that you could never, ever dream of. That He will be able to give you that which you think you will never experience. And whatever concern you have, whatever burden you have, whatever thought you have of, I cannot turn from my present way of life and seek after God, because to do so would mean leaving too much, and to do so would mean that I would have to do too much, that somehow God would show you through what He did in the simple life of this simple young woman, that God would show you that it's not you who has to leave stuff behind, and it's not you who has to do what has to be done in the future. It is He who works in your heart to cut the binds with those things that are telling you that you are free tonight, but you know you're not really free, that keeps whispering in your ear and says, I will provide for you, and yet leaves you empty every day, leaves you feeling there's more to life than this, leaves you thinking, what else do I have to do to taste real joy in life? What other experience do I have to have? What else do I have to engage in to find this satisfaction in my life? That God can separate you from that binding and that bondage by His grace. If you will ask Him and say to Him, I am empty, I am full of wants, I do need, there is a real loss in my life. I feel the fact that I should know You, but I can't know You because I don't know how to know You, because I'm bound by this sense of impenetrable joy that I want, but I just can't feel it. And that God would then come to you and God would say, you don't need to worry about breaking through, because I will break through. I and My mercy will break through. I will give you what you need. And when you turn around and think, I cannot seek after God because I can't do this good, or I can't engage in this, or I can't practice this, that you don't have to worry about what you have to engage in, or what you have to do, or what you don't have to do. Some of you in here tonight in the past said to me, do I have to do that, give up this to become a Christian? And my words to you were, no, you don't have to give up anything to become a Christian. You don't have to do anything to become a Christian. What you have to do to become a Christian is do what Ruth did. You have to seek after God, and you have to look into God's eyes, and you have to ask God, God, I am helpless and I am hopeless, but You will provide, and You have provided in Jesus Christ. You have laid down the life of Your own Son, and He has taken the penalty that was due to me for my sin. He has taken the burden that I couldn't carry, and He has the life that I want, but I cannot attain. And God will come to you like He came to Ruth, and God will give you like He gave to Ruth. He will take you into the field, and He'll bring Boaz along at the same time. And it will just be an accident. No, it won't be an accident. It will be God doing it. And Boaz, out of the corner of his eye, will look and he'll see you and he'll say, "Who's she?" And accidentally, you'll be identified. No, not accidentally. You'll be seen because Christ is seeing you. And when Christ sees you, he brings you to himself. He provides safety. Stay in here. Don't go outside this field. I will give you all that you need. I've told my young men not to touch you. Are you afraid tonight that you're going to be touched? That somebody's going to go home and say to you, "Don't you dare say to me you got religion tonight. Don't tell me you've got a good life." Are you afraid tonight that somebody's going to say to you, "I don't want any of your nonsense. I knew you shouldn't go tonight. I thought I wouldn't let you go, but I let you go once just so that you would experience it." Don't come home and say you found God. Are you afraid tonight? Because God will say to you, "I will safe keep you safe. I will let anybody put their hand on you." There's an enemy who would love to destroy you. There's an enemy who's destroying you now. He keeps you bound. He keeps you held. And all he wants from you is to destroy your life. All he wants is to send you to a lost eternity. He doesn't love you. He despises you. He hates you. He reviles you. And yet he says to you, "I'm your friend. I'm your friend." He's a liar. He's always been a liar. He's been a liar since the day he fell out of the glory in heaven when he said to God, "I don't want you." And God said, "Enough." And he's held the world in lies ever since. Don't let him tell you any lies tonight. Don't let him feed you any fears. There's nothing to fear than coming to God. He will provide for you more than you can dream of. He will give you more than you will ever anticipate. He will give you more than you would ever want. He'll give you more than you'd ever want. He'll give you more than you'd ever want. So don't have him tell you tonight. Don't have him tell you tonight that you go the way of God and you're a loser. That you go the way of God and you're inadequate. You go the way of God and you have no hope. You go the way of God, and it's a sad life. It's not a sad life. It's not an easy life at times. It's tough. It's tough at times. But there's a breakthrough by the Spirit that brings a joy that's real.